Okay, still on the same source sheet, but moving out of our introduction and into Hevel, which is to be followed by Amal. So the word Hevel appears in Koheles no fewer than 38 times. That includes counting Havalim separate from Hevel. Fascinatingly, I started to look systematically at Hevel in Tanakh, and I found something that I never expected to see. Hevel is used consistently in each book in Tanakh, meaning for each book in Tanakh, as we're going to see, the word Hevel only has one meaning, except in Koheles, where it seems very clear that that Hevel has multiple meanings. Weird, but true. I'm going to come back to the name Hevel, as in for the second son of Adam and Chava. We'll talk about that eventually. But dealing with the other uses of the word Hevel in Tanakh, you have essentially two meanings. One meaning is nothing, not substantive, not enduring. That's your first meaning of the word Hevel. Your second meaning of the word Hevel is idolatry. And then there's a third meaning that's just found in Mishle, which is false or corrupt. All of these meanings intertwine. None of them are in a vacuum. But it's striking to see the way this works. So on your sheet in source number 3, I gave you a whole lot of Tanakh references. We're not going to go through all of them. But I wanted you to have the list in case you feel like going through all of them. We're going to go through one from each book, maybe two in certain cases. In order to just show you what we're talking about. So we start with Yeshaya, chapter 30, sentence 7. As you can see when you look on the list, Hevel is not a Chumash word. It shows up once in Devarim, aside from the name Hevel, keeping that aside. But once in Devarim and that's it. And then when you get to the era of the kings, that's when you really see it. So Yeshaya chapter 30, sentence 7, says the following. Umitzrayim, this is one of the speeches that Yeshaya gives against looking for allies in other nations. The kings are not relying on God. Instead, they are looking for other nations to be their allies, like looking for Egypt to support us against Assyria, or later against Bavel. So he says, Umitzrayim hevel varik yazoru. Egypt will help hevel and rik. So rik, we know, rik means empty. Mitzrayim, Egypt, is not going to give us help of substance. That's the way the word is used every time hevel appears in Yeshaya, which, as you see on the list, is only 3 times. Yonah, chapter 2, sentence 9. Jumping to Treasar at the end of the prophets. The problem with the prophets is that 12, the 12 are small. It's easy to miss that. So chapter 2, sentence 9. He says, Mishamarim havlei shav chazdam ya'azovu. Those who guard hevel of nothingness. You see that? Again, it's something that is a thing of no substance. We jump again to Zechariah, still in Treasar, chapter 10, sentence 2. Ki ha-trafim dibru aven. Trafim, some kind of an oracle. We've talked about trafim in other contexts. I'm sorry?
Avraham, no?
Lavan. Not Lavan. But it comes up with Lavan, it comes up with Michal, daughter of Shaul, it comes up in Yechezkel. The trafim dibru aven. They speak falseness. Vakosmim chazu shaker. The sorcerers, their vision is lies. Vachalomos hashav yidaberu. The dreams speak emptiness. Hevel yinachamun. They comfort hevel with hevel. Something again of no substance. You're seeing the uses? Right? Tehillim, chapter 31, sentence 7. And Tehillim, we get a fair number of Hevels, but we're only going to do one. Chapter 31, sentence 7. Sanesi Hashomrim Havlei Shav. Vani El Hashem Batachti. I have hated those who guard Havlei Shav, the same term that we saw in Yonah, right? Things that are empty, I put my trust in God, who is not empty. You sort of wonder if the use of Havlei Shav could be viewed as idolatry and fitted in with other uses of Hevel as idolatry, which we'll see later. But I don't think so. I think it means the way it sounds, something that is empty of no substance that doesn't provide any assistance. Eov, chapter 7, sentence 16. You're free to look at the other references I gave you here. I didn't want us to spend the entire time going through all the different references. Eov says, Ma'asti lo la'olam echye. He says, I am sick of this. I am not going to live forever. Chadal mimeni, leave me alone. Ki hevel yamai. Because my days are hevel. I'm not going to live forever. My days are not enduring. And then, Echa, chapter 4, sentence 17. Echa 4:17. Odenu tichlena einenu. Our eyes are ending. It's a term used for people who cry so much that their eyes are like wiped out, or alternatively, their hope is wiped out. El ezrasenu havel. For our help, which was or is hevel. Okay? This is a term for something of no substance, something that doesn't endure, something that's a nothing. In general, Mefarshim commentators tend to like this as the core meaning of hevel. I brought you an example in source number 4. You know, I frequently quote, in the classes on Tanakh, I frequently quote Mitzudas David, Rabbi David Altshuler in the 19th century, whose comments are very often summaries or concise representations of what's seen elsewhere in his Mitzudas David. But he also wrote Mitzudat Zion. Mitzudat Zion tends to be defining words as opposed to presenting concepts. And here on Hevel, in the beginning of Koheles, you see source number 4. Hevel, inyano davar she'en bo mamash. Hevel means something of no substance. V'hu mush'al milashon hevel pet. It's borrowed from the expression hevel of the mouth, breath. Hamuzkar b'divar rabosenuzal, which you find in the Gemara. So he makes the association with breath of the mouth. And the same thing is true in the academics as they read it. So Professor Michael Fox, Professor Yaakov Klein, the Olama Tanakh edition has both of them. I brought you Professor Zer Kavod in the Dat Mikra in source number 5. He says, Ikar hora'asa, its central meaning is hevel peh, hevel of the mouth. Ubahora'am mush'eles choleif v'chaleh. And with a borrowed meaning of something that is passing and then it disappears. Kazav, vashav, false, empty, lo yo'il, without benefit, and so on. Davar she'en bo mamash. Something that has no substance. The Gemara actually leans into this use of hevel as breath and associates it with warmth and vapor and humidity. In certain contexts, but I'm not going to go, you know, that far into it. That's all one school of thought. And now I'm going to come back to the name of Hevel in Bereishis chapter 4, sentence 1. It's actually worth it. Take a look at the verse itself for a second. First of all, because we really never end up scrolling to the beginning of the Torah. We spend a lot of time in like Divrei Hayamim and Ksuvim. We should see the beginning of the Chumash. So in Bereishis chapter 4, sentence 1, we're told, Vatahar batelet es Kayin. Chava became pregnant and she produced Kayin. Vatomer, and she said, Kanisi ish es Hashem. I have created, made, acquired a human being with God. Look at that. I'm a creator. That's Kayin. Vatosef laledes es achiv es Havel. And then she continued to give birth to his brother, Hevel. And Hevel was a shepherd and Kayin worked the land. Jump to the end of chapter 4. Sentence 25. After the story of Kayin murdering Hevel. Vayega adam odes ishto, vateled bein. Chava has another son. Vatikra es shemo Shase, and she calls him Shase, Seth. Kishas li Elokim zera acher, because God has given me, Shas, Shase, God has given me, set for me, another child. Tachas Hevel, in place of Hevel ki harago Kayin, who was killed by Kayin. So there's obviously a lot to talk about in the family dynamic and naming the kid replacement for, you know, the other one. There's what to say about this issue. But what jumps out at you in the naming of these three sons?
Yeah.
What jumps out at you? There's what, which one of these is not like the others? Why?
Avo means nothing. I mean, it's a mourning, isn't it? Come from that idea?
I don't know. Ask Chava. Ask Chava what it means. You see what I'm saying? When Chava gives birth to Kayin, she explains the name. When Chava gives birth to Shase, she explains the name. Right? When Chava gives birth to Hevel, there's no explanation.
Right?
Hevel doesn't get any explanation. She gives birth to his brother, who is Hevel. That's it. It doesn't even give you, like, and she called. It doesn't even say that. So take a look at source number 6, Radak. Velo zachar lama kara oso Hevel. The text doesn't say why she called him Hevel. Just like it doesn't say the reason for all the other names after Shase until you show up with Noach. Meaning, we don't get Lemech, Mahalalel, Yered. We don't get explanations for those names. He refers you to a pasuk in Tehillim, one of the many references in Tehillim to the name Hevel, where it says, people are Hevel, sons of man are false. Not false in the sense of lying, but false in the sense of something you can't rely on. Ki lo ya'amdu amaskones achas. They don't remain in one form. Vimti yelo tova tipasek mehera. They get something good, it's gone quickly. Kamosharasa hi ubala betova began. Just like Adam and Chava. They had something great in the garden, and then poof, they didn't have something great anymore. Vigurashu misham, they were chased out. Le'amal v'yigia, for struggle and exhaustion. Ulezecher oso ha'inyan kara'a oso hevel hi ubala. And so to remember that, to note that, she called him Hevel, she and her husband. Which, you know, is an interesting note there, because Adam seems to be left out of the whole naming thing. It's really her. Nonetheless, that's what Radak writes. Note, Radak is assuming that Kayin and Hevel are born after they're kicked out of the garden, which is where the story is placed in the Chumash, but not where everybody puts it. Just floating that point. But the idea here is, and this is why I'm bringing it, that the name Hevel has that same ephemeral connotation. Similarly, if you flip the page to source number 7, Ramban, V'kara'aha echad b'shem Kinyan, she names one of them, Kayin, Kinyan, which I'm going to translate here as acquisition. Even though Kinyan often means transaction, here I don't think that that's what it means. Here I think it means acquisition. V'asheni, Hevel. And the other one she calls Hevel, ki kinyan ha'adam lehevel dama. That which a person acquires is like Hevel, nothingness. V'lo ratzta lefaresh ze'alkei lo nichtav tam b'shem ha'sheni. You want to know why she doesn't explain it? She didn't want to say that explicitly. She names the kid. She doesn't want to say, right? Can you imagine at the bris? Like, you get up and give you a nice dvar Torah about the naming of the child. We chose to name our child nothing, because all acquisition is nothing. Enjoy the locks. Like, how do you do that? So she just figured, let me leave that one out of the baby book. Rav David Zvi Hoffman, interestingly, has this line in his commentary to Bereishis where he quotes linguists. You have to know who Rav David Zvi Hoffman was. He was very up on the academic readings of the Torah, and wrote responses to much of it. So in his comments to Bereishis chapter 4, he says that modern linguists say that the word Hevel actually means son, S-O-N. I thought that was very interesting. I have no idea which linguist he's talking about. It's true that, I don't know what's true. Yes, Esther.
I'm thinking about Chava and Adam coming to terms with their mortality.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe the name Hevel was sort of top of mind just because all of a sudden they realized that things are fleeting.
So it's a good idea, but they knew that either Cain and Hevel are both born in the garden or Cain and Hevel are both born after the garden.
Yeah, but maybe they just don't really realize it.
Maybe after they spent time being up at night dealing with one kid, they started to realize. Maybe. So this is all one school of thought about what the word Hevel means. Not one school of thought, but one set of explanations and appearances of Hevel in Tanakh. I take you back now to source number 3 and set 2 of the appearances of the word Hevel. And as I said, the meanings are clearly related. This meaning is consistent with Hevel meaning nothing, but it has more of a negative judgmental overtone because it's referring to, as you'll see, idolatry. Take a look at Devarim chapter 22, sentence 21. No, wait, 22, 21, that's not right. 32, 21, sorry, typo. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. So, this is in the Shira, in the song of Ha'azinu, and it says, Heim kine'uni below El. God says, they angered me, they outraged me with something that is not a god. Kiasuni, they angered me behavlehem, with their Hevel. You see it? So, the Hevel is the low El, the idol that the people have been worshiping. Clear? It's not about something being nothing. It's about something being a negative. It's an idol. Jump to Malachim Aleph, chapter 16. Chapter 16, sentence 13. So this is a reference to the sins of King Baasha as well as his son King Elah. Asher chatu, I'm picking up in the second half of the sentence, chapter 16, sentence 13. Asher chatu, they sinned, v'asher hechtiu as Yisrael, and they made Israel sin. L'hachis as Hashem Elokei Yisrael, to anger Hashem, God of Israel, behavlehem, with their idolatry. That's what it is a reference to. And since we're in the same chapter, you can jump down to sentence 26, where you see the same thing regarding regarding the king Omri. And it says, he went in all the ways of Yeravam ben Nevat, and his sins, he caused Israel to sin. L'achis es Hashem Elokei Yisrael behav lehem, to anger Hashem, God of Israel, with their hevel. This is a reference to their idolatry. And then we jump to Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu has lots of uses of hevel. But we're just going to look at the opener. Yirmiyahu chapter 2, sentence 5. Flipping pages here. Ko amar Hashem, so says God, Ma matzu avoseichem bi'avel ki rachaku me'alai. What did your ancestors find wrong in me? God says, ki rachaku me'alai, that they distanced themselves from me, vayelchu acharei ha'hevel, they went after hevel, vayehebalu, and they became hevel themselves. And you see that a lot in Yirmiyahu. I mean, if you were to go through, you notice how many uses there are in Yirmiyahu. Almost as many as you find in Tehillim. Maybe as many, I'm not sure. It's not so strange to find that the same uses are used for Hevel in Malachim and in Yirmiyahu. Because remember, who's the author of Malachim? Yirmiyahu. It's the same person. So he uses Hevel in that way. One other use of Hevel is found in Mishle. So if you jump to Mishle, chapter 13, sentence 11, and again, all of these uses are intertwined. This is the usage of false or corrupt. Mishle, chapter 13, sentence 11. As I'm getting to it in my own Tanakh here. Okay. Hon mehevel yimat. Wealth will be reduced because people are involved in hevel. Now there you could say, well, maybe that means just that they're involved in something ephemeral. Maybe. But jump to chapter 21, sentence 6, where I think it is more clear. Paul Otsaros Bilishon Shaker Hevel Nidaf Mevakshe Maves. The work of the storehouses in the language of falsehood, Hevel Nidaf. I believe this is one of the uses that people use in order to say that Hevel is like breath. Hevel Nidaf, that it wafts. The Mevakshe Maves, those who seek death. It's talking about wickedness in context. Is someone using a Mishle that has a translation? Anyone using a Tanakh that has an English? If so, if you could turn to Mishle 21:6. I'm actually curious to hear what they do for the translation there. Yep.
Treasures acquired by a lying tongue are like driven vapor heading for extinction.
So they're taking it with the vapor use. Interesting. Driven vapor. Okay. But either way, the judgment of falsehood and corruption, I think we see there. Esther. Yeah. I know you've got the Altman one, right? That's the one you use? I can't hear you because you're muted.
Sorry, here we go. Attaining treasures with a lying tongue is vanished breath and snares of death.
Yeah. Okay. So So using the vapor, but with the negative overtone to it. Okay. I mean, the most famous one in Mishlei is, of course, Sheker Hachein Vehevel Hayofi, right? The it has this negative overtone. So when Koheles uses Hevel, he does it in multiple shades. You have that big Havel Havalim Pasuk in the beginning and at the end, right? Chapter 1, sentence 2, and then again, you see it all over again. Did I reference it on the... Yeah, I did in number 8. Chapter 12, sentence 8. That's why I gave you the list. But Koheles sometimes uses it to mean something that is not substantive, not enduring. So, for example, take a look just at the first case that I'm going to give you of this. Chapter 2, sentence 1. When he says, this, I mean, that is the opening one, right? Havel havalim amara koheles, havel havalim hakol havel. Everything, is, no, sorry, not 1, 2. Chapter 2, sentence 1. He says, I said in my heart, let me go have a good time and see good things. Vihine gamhu havel. And he says that was hevel. And that's his usage in a lot of cases, is very clearly something that is not substantive, not enduring. Other times, it's something that is upsetting. So take a look at chapter 1, sentence 14. I see everything that is done under the sun, and all of it is hevel ur'us ruach. Hevel, and it puts me in a really bad mood. It's really upsetting. And you see that quite a bit. I mean, you see the list I gave you in number 8. It's the fourth bullet point. And then sometimes he uses the word hevel to indicate something that is bad. He doesn't use it for idolatry. That's not really in the conversation, but for something that is bad. So if you take a look at chapter 2, sentence 15, he says, Kimikrei hakasil gamani yekreini. As happens to the fool, that's what's going to happen to me. Why did I bother increasing wisdom? I said in my heart, this is havel. Not hevel in the sense that it's not enduring. Hevel in the sense that it is a bad thing, right? If you go ahead in chapter 2, he applies it also in sentence 19 when he says that he's going to leave all his stuff to whoever's after him, whether wise or foolish. And again in sentence 21, when he says you have somebody who works with all that wisdom and intellect and talent, and then he leaves it to somebody who would not work for it, and that's hevel vara'a rabbah. It is something that is bad. I see a note, someone sent me a direct note in the chat. The idea of nothingness is very prominent in existentialist writing, trying to find meaning in a world without God. I think Shlomo is trying to find meaning in a world without justice where all seems to be for nothing. So I would say, almost, I would say, not that he's trying here to find it as much as he's saying, I haven't found it, or that it's not findable, is where I would go with it. The only thing, though, that I want to note is that sometimes he uses it in ways that are not clear to me. So I gave you in the second bullet point in source number 8 five references to Hevel in the book that I just don't understand. I don't know which of the meanings he's using. So as an example, chapter 4, sentence 7. This will be homework. People can look it up and they can let me know. But in chapter 4, sentence 7, he says, I went and saw Hevel Tachas HaShamesh. I saw that there is Hevel under the sun. And he goes on to describe how there's a person who is alone. He doesn't have a brother. He doesn't have a son. There's no end to his struggle. Who am I struggling for? This is Hevel and bad. So in sentence 8, it's clearly bad. Hevel ve'inyan ra. Does that mean that what he said in 7 is also bad? Maybe. I don't know. Sometimes we get havel havalim, which, as I brought on the sheet, I gave you two different explanations for it. One, which is Ibn Ezra's approach and Rashi's approach and almost everybody's approach. Havel havalim means really totally havel. Like, not just havel, but like global havel. Universal, 100%, no salt added, havel. That's, you know, that the concentrated Hevel. It's like Hevel paste. That's the way most take it. But then you have this really funny read in Rabbi Altshuler, Mitzudas David. Havel Havalim, he says Havel is a verb. It's an imperative, not a verb, it's an imperative, it's an instruction, it's a tzivui. Havel Havalim. He says in number 10, Bezeh Sefer Amar Koheles Livnei Adam Vehizhiram Lehavil Ulham Is Es Havalim. It's an instruction. Treat that which is Havel as Havel. Havel Havalim. I haven't seen anybody else say that. I thought that was really interesting. But the upshot of this, it depends on what view we take of the book. If I take approach number one of that we gave for resolving the problems with the book, that this book believes entirely in Torah, so he's condemning the pursuits of this world, that which is under the sun, with a divine judgment, these things are unworthy of your efforts. These things are even bad, right? That's one way to do it. However, if I take approaches 2 and 3, he's presenting the human experience. Either, like Rabbi Angel suggested, he's saying we can't find value in these pursuits and so we express frustration. Or, in my approach, the Hevel nature of our pursuits in this world demonstrates that our pursuits are not the central purpose of the world's existence. You follow? Hevel plays into all three of the reads for what's going on in this book. Moshe, I see your note in the chat. I'm very glad that Oxford agreed with me. It's not the first time either. It's not the first time they agreed with me. I think they cribbed my notes. But in terms of the overall, this word, which is so important, I think plays into the different reads of the book. Now, what's particularly interesting to me is where we're going next, which is Amal. Because Hevel gets all the press as the big word 38 times. The word Amal shows up at least 35 times in Koheles. And I think it's also a very important word. So God willing, next time, we will spend some time on what Amal means. Maybe we'll talk about Simcha also, just for a change of pace. We'll have to see. Thank you very much, everybody. I wish you a Chag Sameach.